me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. To the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the
Hello again, this is Dr. Kenneth Logan, and you're listening to The Doctor's Inn. I do The Doctor's Inn the third Thursday of each month from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock in the evening, and I cover medical and health issues that I think are important for us to, for me to share with you and for you, the listener, to hear about. And I am interested in hearing if you have any subjects, health or medical related, that you would like me to cover on the show, let me give you my email address. Are you ready? It's K. So my name's Ken Logan. So it's the letter K and then Logan. So K Logan MD. That's M as in medical doctor. K Logan MD at yahoo.com. Let me know that you listen to KZFR and you'd like a subject covered. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. The opinions you hear on this show are my opinions. And I do have a guest today, and his opinions are his opinions. I'll tell you about my guest in just a minute. Right now... I'm going to tell you that The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner with the California Arts Council. Since the year 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsoftheart.net. I actually visit Friends of the Art, and I'm not sure exactly how you do that, if you want the truth. But Friends of the Art. And by Tires Plus, complete auto repair. The technicians at Tires Plus provide year-round services and maintenance for your vehicle, including scheduled maintenance, oil changes, air conditioning and cooling systems, powder coating, engine repair, along with Cooper, Michelin, and all types of AG tires. Located at 624 Broadway Street, Tires Plus. Complete auto repair can be reached at 530-342-8338 and at TiresPlusChico.com and on Facebook. Well, today, for the first half of the show, I'm going to talk with a guest named David Welsh. I'm going to introduce him to you in a minute. Yeah, you're on the edge of your chair, and you should be. And then after that, depending on the amount of time, I'm going to talk about something that you may scratch your head after about, wondering how in the heck I'm going to talk about this. And I'm going to talk about women's rights. Oh, and you're wondering... On The Doctor's Inn, women's rights. How's that fit in with The Doctor's Inn? Well, stay tuned. I'll tell you about it. But first of all, I'm happy to say that I have David Welsh, RN. He's a retired registered nurse, lifelong cyclist, and a safe cycling instructor. Hello, David.
Hello, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hang on a sec.
Hi,
now,
Ken.
Now I can talk?
Now you can talk.
It's a pleasure to be here. Good to be here.
Great. We're both at a good level here on the board. Excellent. thanks for showing up in this cold night. You rode here on your what?
On my bicycle, of course.
All right. So, David, well, I've known David for years, and he's going to instruct us about transportation issues in Chico, California, and health-related issues relating to that, and a variety of other facets thereof. And this is important. He has some great information. So, David, thank you for being here. And tell us who you are and what you're going to tell us about.
Well,
instruct us.
You know, I don't know how much I'll instruct you, but a good place to start, I think, is just to say why this why we got started on this idea. A mutual friend of yours and mine had a little health problem that threatened his ability to drive, and temporarily was unable to drive and feared for a while it might become permanent.
And he lives in Chico.
Yeah, and lives here in Chico. And that really got us to thinking, he and I, about, it's something I think about, have thought about a lot for years, but certainly heightened his awareness of it, of the fact that we live in a very car-dependent culture. And that has, our cities are built for car dependence, and that has a lot of consequences to it in terms of that really relate to our health in a lot of ways. If a person becomes unable to drive, and there are so many reasons why people can become unable to drive, suddenly their life becomes constricted and limited in a whole lot of ways. And it really doesn't have to be that way. We've chosen in the post World War II era, America chose to build its cities in ways that were increasingly car dependent. We segregated housing away from businesses. We segregated types of housing apart from each other. And we spread everything out onto the landscape in ways that made it really difficult for anyone who doesn't have a car to get around. I think from what I've read, some of this was actually a conscious strategy on the part of big corporations who, you know, they had built all this industrial capacity during the Second World War. The war ended. They said, okay, what are we going to make with all this industrial capacity? Well, let's get everybody to live in separate homes that are far apart, and then they will need cars, they'll need more appliances, they'll need all those kinds of things more. And there were lots of other reasons why that developed. But the consequences of this for our health tend to mean more air pollution that affects our health, less physical exercise, just a whole array of things that have an impact on health. And then, of course, as I said, if our health deteriorates and deteriorates in ways that affects our ability to drive, then we really become very, very limited, and it becomes hard to live a vibrant, active life without an automobile.
And we're stuck.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. And yet it doesn't have to be that way. And increasingly, more and more cities around America are beginning to make choices of going in a different direction, building communities. We're realizing that, okay, maybe we don't have to have big parking lots everywhere. Maybe we can do things a little differently than that. And here we're seeing some things just locally, actually. There, you know, we always have more than one current going, and often opposite currents. I see almost any subject you look at, you can see things that are going in opposite directions. So on the one hand, we have large developments that are far away from the center of town that are proposed. But on the other hand,
which
on
is
the positive,
a problem for transportation for
yeah,
people,
which is an issue, of course. But on the other hand, we see there's a very active proposal going on right now to improve the walkability and bikeability of our downtown, which would be a very positive thing indeed. I can't remember if the council's actually made a formal decision, but there was a decision that within the downtown area, if somebody wanted to create housing, and some of these, many of these buildings that have businesses on the ground floor once upon a time had housing on the top floor, on the upper floors, and there's more and more of a move to bring that sort of thing back, and that has been in the past hamstrung by the requirement that you had to provide a parking place for every apartment that you created, and now the city is beginning to move away from that. And we're seeing that kind of thing going on in a lot of cities. And so creating the possibility for people to live in among, integrated into a downtown business district and things like that. And
they can walk to their stores, they can walk to work potentially, et cetera.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and that was,
or bicycle.
Right, or a bicycle. And of course, that was the norm, really, in America before the Second World War.
Good point.
That was the norm. That's how we did things, and it's still the norm in most of Europe. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough that I've been somebody who's been able to travel a bit in Europe and experience what European cities are like. And I just think, you know, I was thinking about today. I happened to have occasion this afternoon to pass by Chico Junior High School at the time it was getting out, and just this mass crush of cars and stuff of all these parents coming to pick their kids up after school. And of course, meaning, and I have been in the Netherlands where all of those kids, 100% of those kids, would get home by bicycle.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
So, wow. You know, but the idea of driving the kid anywhere doesn't even exist.
Wow.
In a city like
we
those,
need to learn.
You know?
Wow.
And so, you know, and, you know, it wasn't that long ago that that was normal in this country, you know? And so I think we need to move back in that kind of direction. And the fact, you know, I think sometimes when I do occasionally, I do belong to a local gym, and sometimes I go there to do weights, and I see all these people sitting on stationary bicycles in the gym. They drove there to sit on a stationary bicycle, you know. And I don't do that because I get around most places by bicycle, and that to me, it's just naturally good for my health. My work, as you know, was I spent many, many years as a cardiac rehab nurse.
A what?
Cardiac rehabilitation nurse, which
now, how
means
did that, what it, yeah, go ahead.
What that means is that was patient education and running exercise programs for cardiac patients, people recovering from heart attacks and heart surgery and things like that. So
it's kind of your
teaching
specialty.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, the health effects of exercise was basically what I worked with all those years, and so I'm very conscious of that. And the idea that for me, I actually, you know, I do some of just going out for exercise, but there's so much exercise that I've built into my daily life by just using a bicycle and often foot to get around and go the places I need to go. And our cities are not very friendly to that in many cases. You know, we have streets where people don't feel real comfortable, where people, you know, we have streets where you can go a long ways without a safe place for a pedestrian to cross the street. And things like that are the kinds of things that we need to improve to make it safer and more comfortable for people to walk. I am, again, as you know, I've been through, it's very interesting, a lot of people aren't aware of this, but the Butte County Health Department actually has a part of their mission is preventing trauma. You know, we think of the health department as focused on things like communicable diseases, but preventing traumatic injuries is also part of their mission. And so,
say that one more time. It's Butte County. Go ahead.
Butte County Health Department.
And one of their missions is
preventing trauma, preventing injuries,
preventing trauma in one's environment.
Yeah, physical trauma. Yeah.
Tell us about how does that relate.
And so, and that relates to a bunch of different things. I mean, just for an example. That's not connected to this, they have a program to give away free baby seats to people to prevent babies from being injured in car crashes.
Great.
You know?
Well, that's good.
And that's a good thing. But one of their programs is to teach programs to teach safer bicycling to children and in some cases to adults.
So this is our Butte County Health Department, correct?
Yeah.
Teaching, tell us again, teaching what?
Teaching safer bicycling. Preventing trauma by preventing injuries by teaching people how to do things in a safer way.
Are you involved in that?
Yes, and I went through, under their auspices a few years ago, I went through a program to become certified as a safe cycling instructor. What's called technically the term is a league cycling instructor.
League cycling instructor?
It's under the auspices of the League of American Bicyclists, which you know, is a national organization that advocates for bicycling, for safer streets for bicyclists, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so under that auspice, I got that kind of training. And, you know, it's interesting. I personally feel extremely safe riding on the streets of Chico as they are. I'm very comfortable doing that. but I have a fairly advanced skill set in doing this kind of stuff. And and I could teach other people those skills, and I do teach other those people those skills, but most people are never going to develop those skills. And what we really need in order to get most people feeling comfortable bicycling on our streets is to change the streets so that they are more comfortable for bicycling, creating separated bike lanes, protected bike lanes for people, thinking about intersection design, things like that. And there's a lot of work going on in that area in places all over the country. And there's even cities here in California where one can see examples of it. Surprisingly, perhaps San Luis Obispo has done some great work in that. One of the best cities in a big urban area, small city in a big urban area, is Emeryville downtown, which most of us know. In the Bay Area, where most of us know that as the place where the big IKEA is down there in the Bay Area. That's Emeryville. But that little city, sort of surrounded by Berkeley, has done amazing work in making its streets safe and comfortable to bike on.
So a place like Chico could learn from those other cities.
We can learn from all those places, and so much good work and good design. You know, we don't have to invent new things. We just have to come up with some modifications of the streets that we have.
Gotcha. And then I just want to reiterate, this show is the Doctor's Inn. I'm a family practice doctor. David Welsh is a retired registered nurse that's talking to you today. And our work and our lives have involved healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And still do. And so the idea that part of health is increasing our activity. Increasing our activity is one of the things we all teach as far as helping ourselves with our health ongoing for the rest of our lives, including when we get in our 70s, like David and I are.
Right.
And it becomes even more important.
Indeed it does.
And so bicycling and walking and empowering us all to that and making it safer for us, all of that is a win-win. That's a win-win.
Yes.
All right. So I'm glad you're doing that, David.
Right. And it's always interesting to do. And then sort of a whole nother side of how we design our communities, of course, is that we need to shift more in the direction of designing communities where transit can work. And transit can't work in very low density environments because there just aren't enough people living close enough to the bus stop to make transit work. So transit needs some density in order to be able to work. And as our community grows, as Chico grows, we're going to, we will inevitably, hopefully, we will begin to have a much more functional transit system somewhere down the line.
Transit as in buses.
Transit as in buses and perhaps even in some light rail and things like that somewhere down the line. You know, there used to be, once upon a time, the old Diamond Match factory down there in the southwest of Chico, there used to be a rail system that came from that to downtown.
Really?
And,
I did not know that.
Yeah.
For the workers?
Yes.
I did not know that.
And there used to be trolleys going up and down the Esplanade and things like
Hence
that.
The railroad through the track through the down Esplanade area.
Yes. And if you go over to there is over in Oroville, there's a Butte County History Museum. And in that history museum, there's a little exhibit on the history of rail around here. And in the early 20th century, you could take 7 electrified trains a day from here to the Bay Area.
Really? I'll be darned. Wow.
But that was, that was allowed to disappear as we became a more car-centric place.
Hey, and when was that again? Tell me.
That was in the early 20th century. I remember, I think there's a schedule on display over there from, about 1915, something like that.
Those were electronic.
Were electric trains back then.
Wow.
And that electric trains were not even common, but this was actually an unusual system.
Wow.
Sacramento, I forget the name of it, but anyway, Sacramento Northern Railroad, maybe,
don't
something
we
like
wish that.
That
was still functioning.
Yes, don't we,
and
though?
And much improved.
Yes.
Of course it could be by now.
So, and then, of course, when we really think, when we grow up blow it up to the most macro level of health. Of course, all of these impact on the climate crisis that is changing, that is going to have dramatic effects on all of our lives in the years to come, and especially on our children's and grandchildren's lives. And so in that biggest picture of health and well-being, again, the answer is less use of automobiles and more use of walking, bicycling, and transit.
Yes.
And you
absolutely.
Know, or the generic term I like is active transportation for walking and bicycling and
active
so on.
Transportation.
And then of course, you know, there's also the extra side benefit because there are significant numbers of people in our community with disabilities, people who get around using wheelchairs, things like that, powered wheelchairs in many cases, and the same things that make the community better for walking and bicycling also make life safer and more comfortable for those folks.
And wheelchairs, so, et cetera.
Yeah. You know, if it's easier to get around on bike or foot. Again, I've seen some lovely, you know, the Dutch just do amazing stuff in this way. And they have tiny little, think of a micro automobile with its back end open. And it's electric, and you drive your wheelchair into the back end of it.
Whoa.
That takes up the entire interior space of it. And then you can drive this thing down the bike path.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that's a way that a lot of people get around in the cities in the Netherlands.
We've got a lot to learn here.
Yeah. And we indeed can learn from some of those things, you know, and adapt those things to our needs here.
Yeah, and as our generation gets older and older, what's the term for it, our generation?
The baby boom generation.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about that today. Okay, where do we fit into that? The baby boom generation, technically speaking, was people born from 1946 to 1960. So the 1964, excuse me, 64. So the youngest of the baby boom generation are 60. The oldest are approaching 80. And moving into the age group, where, once again, more and more likely to develop the kinds of issues that make it impossible for a person to drive, or even if it's still possible to drive, maybe not drive at night and things like that. And so creating, again, transit systems that work and transit systems that are good enough that people will use them by choice, not by dire necessity. Those are the kinds of things that that we need to work towards.
And the using of the bicycle and the walking is helping our health to help us in our latter years as well.
Right, exactly, and staying active. And there's, you know, it's funny, I recently joined a Facebook group for bicyclists over 70, and some of the people in that group are like close to 90 and still out there riding their bikes, and so
Excellent. It
can be done.
Excellent for one's health.
Yeah. And staying, you know, staying active. You know, I used to joke in my patient education, I would look very seriously at people and say, you know, it's been scientifically proven that more people die in bed than anywhere else, so stay up and keep moving.
Very good. Wow. And exercise being part of it. And those are people that have already had a heart attack or something similar. And so... Wow, and we, of course, would like to prevent heart attacks by our
activity
level and our
and
other things that we do for our health.
Hoping to continue that myself.
Wow.
So.
Yes, me too. What the heck? Wow, excellent. And you know, I'm thinking back of our friend, our mutual friend, who was having some. Fortunately, it was we don't know how it's going to go because of his age and his abilities, unable to. To drive, and that really put my mind thinking about this for my future, and then what you've talked about. Wow, we need to increase the availability for safe bicycling and walking in our communities, such as Chico
and
transit.
Right.
Busing.
And there's some cool things being done in terms of new devices, also new kinds of essentially bicycles, but actually tricycles these days, adult trikes, three-wheelers, increasingly
stable.
Increasingly better design, and now increasingly with the electric assist that allow a person to get around quite nicely with a moderate degree of effort. Mm-hmm. And I know more and more of my older friends who are they're getting, even though they bicycled for a long time and so on, the hills start to get harder and things like that. The distances start to seem longer, and so the electric assist bikes that are coming around are looking better and better for
and they still can do
that older.
And they still can do the human powered element as much as they are able.
Exactly.
And then just have that electric assist when needed.
Right.
Great.
And
great
so
idea.
And again, for people who have balance issues and things like that, the three-wheeled versions. And again, adult three-wheelers from a few years ago, not very well designed, but the newest ones, we're seeing better design, better frame geometries and things like that that make them more stable and safer to ride and so on. And I'm really impressed with some of the work that's being done in that. I think we're going to see a lot more of that coming around.
And then tell me that name of that, Butte County Health Department empowering safe bicycling. Tell me your situation there.
Well, my title with this stuff is a league cycling instructor, but that's, that's under the, and I don't even know, I'm not even sure what the name of the program is under the county health department, but just every now and then I get a call from them saying, hey, we've got a class set up here. And,
for you to teach relative to safety at bicycling.
Right.
What a great, I'm just so happy that the county health department is doing that.
Right. And not only safe bicycling, too, but efficient bicycling to enable people to ride in the most efficient and most comfortable way.
And it's good education. And the people that you're teaching it, when you do teach that for Butte County Health Department, the age of the listeners are...
It's been everything under the sun. We've done it with groups of school children, both elementary and middle school children. We've done it with groups of city employees. And I've actually, we've done some classes at the Jesus Center for the folks who are guests, clients there. And many of whom depend on bicycles to get around, mostly for, economic reasons. They don't have... they don't have the kind of resources to buy a car, so depend on bicycles.
Definitely, I've definitely see that. And by the way, and carrying a massive sum of, where I've seen it is some of the work I do on Fridays is with a fair amount of homeless people, and when they're on a bike, and sometimes they carry their total belongings with them on their bike. That there's some teaching there that would be great, support, and actually a tricycle would be great for some of those people.
Yes.
Efficient one, like you're talking about. Wow. Wow, David. Anything else? We're kind of winding down your part of the show, if that's all right. But
I think that's about right.
Top it off. Anything else you want to say to the listeners?
I think the last thing to say is just reiterate that that what we're used to in the way cities are designed and the way our communities are designed is not the only way to do it. It's not the way we used to do it. It's not the way it's done in many...
It's not the way we even used to do it here.
Right. It's not the way it's done in many other countries. Mm-hmm. And I think we can shift... appropriately in the direction of cities that are more walkable, more bikeable, and where transit can work more effectively. And that's what we're going to have to do to keep a livable planet. And on the way, we can actually make our lives happier and more comfortable in the way it's in... I don't ride a bicycle out of some sort of... It's not a sacrifice for me to ride a bicycle. It makes my life better. I hate it when I have to drive a car because it's less pleasant for me to drive a car than it is to ride my bike.
Great. Great to hear. Excellent. And here in the dark, you rode it here tonight.
Yeah, and I've got very good lights and very good reflectors. And so, I feel pretty safe doing that.
Very good. Well, David Welsh... retired registered nurse, lifelong cyclist, and safe cycling instructor. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Always a pleasure, Ken.
And I'm on your side totally relative to empowering people to bicycle and walk and do it safely and learn it about it safely and do everything we can to encourage that in our fellow human beings.
Yep.
Well, it's like I was saying earlier, it's a win-win.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, David.
All right, Ken. Thank you. A pleasure.
Take care, man. All right. Wow, that was great. That's very inspiring, that David Welsh and what he says. Very inspiring. Okay. And David, drive safely home. For the remainder of the show, The Doctor's Inn, you're listening to The Doctor's Inn, and this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond, which is also able to be heard, and maybe some of you are listening via this, and that is the internet at kzfr.org. Well, I told you at the beginning of the show that I was going to talk about women's rights. And you might be saying to yourself, hey, wait a minute. I thought I was listening to a show called The Doctor's Inn, a radio show having to do with health or having to do with medical issues. So what in the world does women's rights have to do with any of that? And by the way, you might be thinking, Dr. Logan is a medical doctor, not a political scientist of some sort. So if you, the listener, is wondering that, well, good. I'm glad you're wondering. And because indeed, if you have those questions, I say great, because it's my opinion and indeed there are some questions that need to be distinctly answered relative to women's rights and how they relate to health. And they need to be stop being glossed over and stop being camouflaged and stop being ignored and talked about in funky ways. So to begin this discussion that I'm going to do now, I want to say some words and phrases that are going to be part of this discussion. So remember, I'm talking about women's rights, and women's rights as far as it relates to health and medical issues, because this show is called The Doctor's Inn. So here's some words that are going to be part of this discussion. The United States of America. That's some of the words. Some other words. Democracy. Freedom. And specifically, health care freedom. And the rights and freedoms for all people in our country, the rights of every single female in this country, and the rights of every single male in this country also, the rights of every single person in this country relative to what they do or they do not do relative to their own body, and what they do or don't do relative to their own health care decisions, their rights. And here's another word relative to women's rights, and it's specifically women's rights relative to them living a life via their own desires relative to their health care. Here's another word. Listen to this one. Discrimination. And by the way, I'm going to say this again. I better say this right now. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. These are my opinions. So discrimination against women when it comes to the individual sovereignty of their own body and the decisions that relate to their own body. The absolute need to never tolerate men claiming power over women ever. And let's do some historical reviewing about that very action in this country and that concerted action of men exerting power over women historically within this country. I want to, in a sec, I'm going to list some things so we can all get on the same page relative to how it's been over the last century or so. So here's some simple history relating to how women have been treated in this country over the over our history, and specifically what it's taken for changes to be made in that. Some changes. Let's all think about the past together just for a few minutes, a brief few minutes. First of all, it was the year 1920. That was a year after my dad was 1 year old at that time. Women in the United States and in 1920 were first allowed to vote. That was the 19th Amendment to our Constitution in 1920, so that women could vote. Prior to 1920, half of us citizens here in the United States, half of the citizens of the United States could not vote. Again, women gained the right to vote in this country in 1920. That's not so long ago. Our country was founded in 1776. Well, that was 1920. Also, think about this. Prior to 1882, women were considered, get this, property of their husband. So property of a man. A woman was considered property of a man until 1882. So prior to 1900, women could not own property in the United States. Women could not own property in the United States until 1900. Women, and here's something that was, when I was, this change happened that I'm going to talk about right now, happened when I was like, 4 years out of high school, graduated 4 years. This happened 4 years after I graduated high school, and that is the fact that women could not open their own bank accounts here in the United States until 1974, and could not establish their own credit card until that could never be a woman could do that. Until 1975. Again, that was within my lifetime. I was certainly an adult by then, of course, 4 years out of high school, and that's not that long ago. Wow. And here's another issue. I'm going to talk about this thing a bit here. Because I think it does relate to the issue that's being that's going through Congress and going through the Supreme Court, and that's the issue of family planning rights and reproductive rights of women, specifically the issue of yes or no, choice or not choice, relative to abortion. And let me get that out of the way since I said the word abortion. What is abortion? Well, we doctors think of abortion in three different ways. Abortion is the ending of a pregnancy. There's three categories. One is what we call in the medical science, it's spontaneous abortion, which you in the lay people call it a miscarriage. But it's a spontaneous abortion. It's abortion that happens spontaneously on its own. The woman has no control over it. And it's sad. And it requires support and help. Not discussed and threatened to somehow bring a crime determination against the woman, for God's sakes. And then the second kind of abortion is a therapeutic abortion. Now that is an abortion that is via the reason of a health risk, because there's some kind of health risk for the woman, or there's a congenital disease process noted in the fetus or the embryo or the fetus before it's able to be an independent human, and it's a terminal. Congenital abnormality in this fetus, well, the most appropriate thing to do is to end the pregnancy, and that's called a therapeutic abortion, not a crime. And then the third one is an elective abortion, and that's a woman's own private choice for whatever her reason to end a pregnancy. And I'm going to get into the maleness of this whole subject in a minute. But first of all, I'm going to talk again about involuntary servitude. That's the word I was entity that of something that I wanted to talk about. Involuntary servitude, where a person is made against their will to be enslaved economically, among other things, to another person. Involuntary servitude within the United States was abolished in the 13th Amendment to our Constitution. However, that's except as a punishment for a crime. So as a punishment, people do, of course, a type of involuntary servitude in prison. And when a woman is mandated to continue, however, an unwanted pregnancy and mandated by other human beings to do just that, keep the pregnancy going, that can be looked at as a form of involuntary servitude, I say. And one could say, well, there's the exception of the involuntary servitude is, okay, that's as part of punishment for a crime, but wait a minute. There is no crime, right, defined that would relate to sexual intercourse without the intention of pregnancy for either males or females. And a pregnancy requires 50% activity from the female, 50% from the male. So, unwanted pregnancy or a pregnancy that's not desired is as much a male caused phenomenon as it is the woman. But yet all this goes, we're not talking enough about the men involved here. Therefore, when a woman is made to carry a pregnancy against her own health risks, like we've heard in the news, when a woman is made to carry a pregnancy, even though it's against her own health risks and or against her own decision, according to her own desire, that is an example of involuntary servitude here in our country via the self-power of the created the self-power created by male politicians often. Male politicians create this involuntary servitude for women. I say, leave women's rights alone, oh, you male politicians. This is about the right of a woman to make her own reproductive choices. Birth control, pure and simple. Leave it alone. Leave her alone. Yes, the issue stirs up some strong feelings about from certain people because it involves the presence of what could be another living human being. That is, if the fetus was allowed to develop into an independent human being. However, a fetus is an embryo, and a fetus is not an independent human being. So this is different than an independent human being. It is different. And also, the decision of having or not having an abortion is, say, a therapeutic abortion to help a woman's, because a woman's health is at risk, or the baby's has a terminal illness, to be kind to the baby, you're going to have an abortion so the baby doesn't have to suffer upon birth. the fetus is not an independent human being yet until it's able to be independent and live on its own. So also the decision of having or not having an abortion is a very difficult decision to be made by any woman and by any male if a woman obtains the help relative to decision-making from the male that was involved with the pregnancy. Remembering, again, a male is involved in every pregnancy, correct? Anyway, it's a difficult choice for the woman. However, the ability to make that decision for herself is a woman's sovereign right. To allow male politicians to make laws that relate to the reproductive body parts, let's say, okay, if male politicians want to make reproductive body part decisions for males like themselves, great, that'd be fine. But not male politicians shouldn't be making reproductive body part decisions for women by law. It shouldn't make law. This is unbelievable to me. how the power over the rights of women that those male politicians are wielding and attempting to wield further. It's unbelievable to me. I say to the male politicians who are attempting to do this and are doing this all the time, be they a Supreme Court justice or male, or be they a in Congress, the House or Senate, relinquish, if anytime they're going to discuss any of this in Congress, they need to relinquish their gonads, in the male, they're called testicles, at the congressional clinic on their way into the correct congressional chamber. And then, and only then, could they do a fair discussion on the reproductive health of women. How does that sound, male politicians? All right. And by the way, you know that these are my opinions, not the opinions of KZFR or anybody else. Privacy. The right of privacy for each individual in this country, for each of us, be it a woman or a man, is part of our rights. And included in that privacy is the privacy over each individual's own body. No politician, be it a male or female politician, has the right to invade the privacy of any individual's body, ever. Listen to this. I'm a doctor. The sovereign nature of one's own body is absolute. As a physician, that is a premise that is distinctly understood and sacrosanct and distinctly respected. The sovereignty of one's body is absolute. Nobody else to make decisions about it by law. I mean, to make laws against one's own decisions about their own body. Furthermore, now I'm going to make sure that we all of us men and women are on the same page relative to the subject of pregnancy and what it means to women and the risks that go with pregnancy. That's the other thing. Determining that women have to be pregnant. If they're pregnant, they have to keep the pregnancy. Oh, yeah? Well, you've got to know the risks that go with this. And that includes what I'm going to talk about in a minute is morbidity and mortality from pregnancy. They don't know it, I'm sure. Anyway, let me just say this. The subject of pregnancy as a body function, as a bodily occurrence, and as the distinct health issue is that this, the beauty of it, the pregnancy, the amazement of what it is, the mystery of what it is, but also we all need to be on the same page of the potential health risk that it is. We males have absolutely no clue as to what it means experientially to be pregnant. We males go through nothing in our lives that compare to how it is for a woman to be pregnant. The joys and the wonderful amazingness of pregnancy, yet also the physical, mental, and other health issues that are potential with pregnancy. We all need to understand that. Here's some statistics that I want us all to know and share. We all need to know the enormity of the physical phenomenon of pregnancy. And I'm mainly speaking to men now. But all of us. I'm going to now reveal some statistics that I think are generally kept fairly quiet here in this country. I don't know why. And these statistics have to do with what we in the medical world call them, again, like I said earlier, the morbidity and mortality figures related to pregnancy. Morbidity means, from a medical standpoint, deaths because of pregnancy. And I'll give you figures in a minute. Therefore, this is the medical condition in which pregnancy leads to a death of a woman. And again, I'm going to tell you how it looks in this country and how it compares to other countries. And then also the morbidity, which is the other medical conditions, which are many, many more women have medical conditions that don't lead to death. Many. Pregnancy is not just a wonderful slam dunk. So I'm going to start now with the mortality rates. And these are the deaths of women due to their pregnancy. And when we talk about this number, it's a pregnancy-related death that occurs during the pregnancy months, but also for up to 42 days after the delivery of the baby. So 42 days is 6 weeks, approximately 6 weeks. And the reason for that through the pregnancy and 6 weeks after the pregnancy as the time of if there are death or illness occurs related to the pregnancy during that time. Why do we include that 62, that 6 weeks after the delivery? Is because that's about approximately the amount of time it takes for the woman's physiology to return back to her near normal self is about 6 weeks. So let me give you some death numbers. United States deaths, number of deaths per 100,000 live births. So for every 100,000 women that have a baby alive, how many women out of that 100,000 women who had a baby, how many women died from their pregnancy? Well, in the year 2021, it was 33. That's three times what it is rate in Canada and United Kingdom, England. So 33 in our year 2021, the most recent figures we have on this, 33 women died due to pregnancy for every 100,000 births in the United States. Wow. And compare that to other countries. As the only comparison I have is for the year 2020, when the United States was a little less than there were. But again, we compare in the 20 to 30 range, well, mid-20s to 30 women die per 100,000 live births. So 100,000 women who get pregnant and have babies, about 25 to 30 of those women die from the pregnancy. In the United States, we compare about the same as China, and we compare about the same percentage of deaths from pregnancy as Iran. The countries such as England and Canada are about a third of that. And Japan is much lower than that. Their number is 4, not 30, but 4 women deaths for every 100,000 pregnancies that go to term. Now, the causes. What are the causes of death in pregnancy, and what does the pregnancy do that can bring about death and morbidity or illness? And again, much more of this morbidity, in other words, illness stuff that's treated to prevent death, happens many, many more times than the deaths do. So that 30 per 100,000, well, that's small number compared to the number of women who have these other medical conditions due to their pregnancy. And who needs to listen to this is the political, the congressmen and women who are determining this pregnancy issue in women, taking that choice from them. They need to know that the what's at risk here for the woman's health for something like pregnancy. I don't think they know. But anyway, what are some of the problems that came up with pregnancy? Postpartum depression. Now, we in the business, medical world certainly understand this. Are aware of this. Postpartum depression means when women get depressed, actually during their pregnancy, but thereafter, following the delivery of their baby, significant depression. And that, I don't know how often that occurs, but it's fairly common. I've certainly seen it in practice over the years. So it's fairly common. Again, I wish I had the numbers of how common it is, but it's fairly common. Now, that does not include postpartum depression as an entity, as a diagnosis, means that the pregnancy itself, the person wasn't depressed. They did not have the medical mental illness of depression prior to their pregnancy. The depression came following the pregnancy, following the delivery. And I don't know how long, months, I'm sure. I don't know how long it could go on. But as a consequence to that, suicide and homicide are increased in due to this postpartum depression and other stresses that occur with pregnancy in women. Hypertension or high blood pressure. High blood pressure can come up as a factor, as a caused by pregnancy in women. And some of that is called preeclampsia and some is eclampsia, which means that it can involve parts of the some of the kidney function and even the brain function with eclampsia. So the heart can get affected by pregnancy and lead to something called cardiomyopathy, when the heart, therefore, is weakened and cannot pump as strong as needed, caused by pregnancy. Stroke. That is, there's a certain number of women who have strokes because of pregnancy. And a stroke means that one or more blood vessel in the brain is disrupted and part of the brain stops being able to work. That's a stroke, pregnancy related. Venous thrombosis, so clotting in the, usually that's clotting in a leg or something, but in a peripheral like leg, sometimes arms or other areas. But the biggest risk of coming out of that or for morbidity and mortality is what's called when the blood clot then moves up to a lung. It's called pulmonary embolus, and that means part of the lung or lungs, one or both lungs, shuts off. And that is about 10% of the women who die from pregnancy are because of that pulmonary embolism, blood clot to the lungs, which started in a leg or some peripheral place. Wow. And so then there's the entire physical and mental issues that relate to the time around and during the delivery of the baby. The physical steps of the delivery of the baby are universal and are no piece of cake. Wow. Put all that together, and when male politicians are deciding on issues such as woman's choice, it just bothers me. I've got to stop now and end this show. So I'm going to tell you, thank you for listening, and I'll maybe talk more about this in the future. But I'm a voice that is my voice, a doctor's voice, relative to this issue of abortion choice or not choice. It's not whether we think abortion's a good thing. It's a woman's choice. She herself needs to make her own decisions on this. All right. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by D.A. Lampe, Lampe Construction. So D.A. Lampe Construction. And Lampe is A-L-M-P-E-E. They are a proud supporter of KZFR and community radio in Northern California. And for more information, dial 1-800-DALAMPEConstruction.com. Hang on just a second here. I had to get my computer thing to come back on there. And then also, the Doctor's Inn is made possible again by you, the KZFR supporters, and by Mountain Sports. They are providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 5:30 p.m. at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico, serving Chico in the North State since 1975. And again, I will tell you that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And you are listening to KZFR 90.1 FM. KZFR Chico is a listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you can also listen to KZFR on the internet at KZFR.com. www.alzheimers.org. Now, stay tuned for Planetary Radio. Let's see if I can get that on for you.
Than in Saturn.
I love thinking about the weird ways that it rains on other worlds, you know, especially on Titan, that moon. Mm-hmm. But as we move out to the ice giants, it gets even weirder. And before we talk about that, what is it that differentiates these ice giants internally from gas giants?
The ice giants are gaseous in their outer layers, just like the gas giants are. But they have much less hydrogen and helium than Jupiter and Saturn do, for example. So we think only about, like, say, 10 to 20% the outer layer is actually a hydrogen-rich gas layer. There's a lot more.